Hi, and welcome to the Expansive Podcast, the podcast where we help you to think expansively about the world you find yourself in and the world you are going to find yourself in just a few years. My name is Eric, and I'm always joined by my ever-elegant co-host, Pouty McPoutface, coming to you from Dubai today.
Yeah. Well, those Pouty pictures are from the lift in Romania. So for the listeners, hello, everybody. Welcome.
John. I'd like to just scold Eric quickly. Also known as John Sonne. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. McPoutface. I'd like to redo the introduction. Welcome to the multiple award-winning podcast. Yes, podcast good. Of the year, Expansive.
Yes, thank you for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So when I was in Bucharest, I got into this lift and I was like, wow, this mirror is amazing. So I started taking some selfies, as you do when you get into a cool mirror. Yes. And I just started pouting in all the photos. I don't know why. I was in a good mood.
There was a vibe. I could tell.
There was a vibe. I was vibing. I was pouting. When in Bucharest, pout. That's the rule. That's the rule. Yeah, good to be with you again this week. And
Listen, did you see this thing with James Blunt? James Blunt.
Well, he's doing like a comedy. He's become a comedian. What's going on with him?
So obviously, like, you know, he became very big and famous. And what was that song? You're Beautiful, you know, whatever. And then people really hated on James Blunt for years and years and years. But he's this very self-aware, sort of like doesn't take himself too seriously kind of guy. Yeah, he became like one of the most hated musicians ever. And so he's made this like comeback now where he's recorded his first album in I don't know how many years. And like part of the way that he's promoting it is that he said that if this album goes to number one, I'll like officially go in and give myself a new name and you guys can decide what the name is going to be. And so he's been doing all these skits around it and it's so funny. And of course, like, you know, so people have been voting for different names and the name that became, or the one that he had to go and change his name to is Blunty McBluntface. It's so funny to me because I don't know if you remember years ago, there was another competition that was launched where they said, like, you get to name one of the, like, marine vessels. It was like this, like, state-of-the-art vessel that was going to go into the ocean and do all this amazing research. And people, you have the opportunity to name this thing, you know, give it an iconic name. And the name that it ended up with was something like Tuggy McTugboat. And it's just like the internet is so predictable. It's so funny. Anyway.
So Blunty McBluntface, is that his name? Blunty McBluntface. Oh, that's crazy. Look, you can't trust the internet. You know, the internet's always going to go. Because I also think people have an opportunity to show a different part of themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you might get like somebody that's actually quite serious in real life, but then they get this opportunity to be somebody very funny or tongue-in-cheek or actually quite rude online. I mean, I sent you a picture this morning, a screenshot of I did a TikTok about Elon Musk's robo-taxis. And I got so much hate. I that I actually stopped reading the comments. I was like, this is that people have just totally lost it. I'm just talking about a robo-taxi. And to the point that TikTok actually sent me a message and said, we're deleting some of the bullying comments. We're so sorry about
this. That's insane.
Like, what is wrong with people? That's insane. And so, yes, this is the internet. Eh? This is the internet. People are upset and they just want to throw their toys out the cot. So, well done, Blunty McBluntface.
Yes.
Congratulations on your new name. Yeah, wow, that's so funny.
Oh, that's so funny.
So we got a really exciting podcast, and it's obviously in our new format that we are taking. If you joined us last week for our new format, please do let us know what you thought about it. It keeps us very much on current terms and understanding what is going on in the world. And in fact, what has happened is that Eric and I are doing a lot more homework as well as Robin, our producer, doing a lot more pre-work to try and figure out what are the most amazing stories that are happening out there to help us almost prepare for this future in a more expansive way. And I know this is not on the list, but have you seen all the UFO, UAP sightings that are happening all around the world? Washington, there was some big UFO, UAP showing there. Miami, there was another one going on there. there seems to be a whole lot of new sort of, you know, UFOs showing themselves. And it was, I think, last year or the year before where I started talking about, you know, the aliens are going to land. And I am more certain than ever that within the next year or two, I think we're going to have full open contact. And I think this is super weird for many people, but I think it's also super time that we actually get going with this. Because, I mean, how long have we been thinking about this and thinking that this might happen, might not happen? I mean, it's about time it actually happens. You know what I mean? So it's exciting what's coming and what's happening around there. So
I think our feeds are obviously very different. I haven't seen that at all.
Oh my God, it's all over the place. It's all over the place. So
yeah, but then again, you know, your wallpaper is also an alien. You have an alien as your background on your wallpaper.
That is correct.
For your phone.
It is.
So like, I think your feed is going to be.
Yes, I'm all about the aliens. Yes. I'm inviting them in. I want to engage with them. I'm just so excited to want to engage with them. I don't know. I'm excited. I think the most exciting, think about this, Eric. Think about the most exciting thing that you could imagine for your life. Mine is visiting another planet with other beings on it. Like, think about that. Like, think about that unbelievable approach. And we've also got to start to realize that we've reached the cap of our five senses. You know, like, if you can see it, taste it, touch it, hear it, it's real in our own sort of little world, but there's so much going on outside of this. So like, we've also got to explore the potential of the magic and the opportunities that are outside of our five senses. And I'm just excited about it. That's just, I guess, my personality more than anything else that wants this to happen.
Yeah, yes, I can hear the excitement. Yes. You know, it is always mind-blowing to me to think of how much we are missing out on, like in terms of just what we can't hear, what we can't see, what we can't taste. And when you look at those mantis shrimp that live in the ocean and like, they can see in like ultraviolet and they can, you know, I mean, it's like, it's mind blowing.
Yeah, we know so little, bro. And we've spoken about this. Like, we just know so little. And
yeah, we do.
It was Roald Dahl that said, those who don't look for magic never find it. And this is what it is, man. It's so magical what's going on out there. Yeah, I love it. So let's start off with some good news. And there's always good news. And I'm always looking for good news out there. And it was a TED Talk post that I saw that spoke about some amazing new things that are happening out there in the world. And what we are seeing is a massive decline in carbon emissions in China for the first time ever because of their huge deployment of solar and wind that they're running across their country. And we often think about ourselves as China as this sort of like far-flung country that's destroying the world. But they are so far ahead when it comes to solar and wind that it's just really exciting. And I think the Western world has got a long way to catch up to what they're doing. And as one of the countries that was putting the most amount of emissions into the world, and for them to be cutting it by such a big structural piece, and they didn't mention what percentage, but they said a huge structural percentage. So I'm really excited that we get to see a major power like that start to go in a direction of being more environmentally friendly and just taking the steps towards the right way. So bravo, China. And also being in Dubai, we see so much more Chinese stuff here. You know what I mean? The options we have towards buying Chinese things, not just cars, which are just full all over the roads, but products and foods and restaurants. I mean, I just went to Chinatown that's been built in the Dubai Mall, the whole new section. You cannot believe, it's unbelievable. They had these displays, flowers, these very big flowers, let's say twice the size of my head, right? And they had them as a display in these shops and they were all breathing. So they had designed them in a way that these flowers were opening and closing and almost like they were swaying in the wind, but they were inside a design. It was brilliant, like so brilliant. The Chinese are really, really excellent at thinking out in totally different ways. So bravo China for that.
Tell me, is Haval and those kind of brands big in Dubai?
Not Haval, eh? There's other ones. So I know Haval has done huge things in South Africa. And I even joke, you know,
half
my Jewish friends in Fresno are driving Havals, which is like a what? Like Fresno is full of Range Rovers, Mercedes-Benz and BMWs. And my Jewish brethren are all driving Havals. You're like, okay, something's changed. Something's changed in the ether that they're all driving. But there's cars here, Eric, I have never seen before. I don't even know how to pronounce them. And they look stunning. And we all know Chinese were very good at copying, still are very good at copying, but they've also developed a lot of their own things and really amazing. I mean, it's really impressive what they're up to. And I think what happens when you get the media telling you sort of negativity all the time and then coming to a country that doesn't have that negativity towards them, geez, it's really impressive what they're up to, you know, more so than ever before.
Yeah.
The second piece, I've got three pieces of good news. The second piece of good news is deforestation in the Amazon is down 45% in the last 12 months. And that is music to my ears. And I can imagine that most people have been told for so long that we have deforestation going on at such a pace that all we focus on is this deforestation and the pain of it. But all of a sudden, we've had a change, you know, and now we have a decline of 45% in the last 12 months. And when I heard this, insane. I was like, oh man, this is so great. Fantastic. And I think with urban farming and new tools that we are starting to bring online at the moment, using precision farming, using AI, we're starting to use less land, yield more product. I mean, in Dubai, we've got so many green farms now making all sorts, not making, growing all sorts of different vegetables out of the sand, you know, so hydroponically and all sorts of different ways. So really fantastic news coming out of the Amazon. And the last piece, which I think is also really great, is 480 million children worldwide are now getting fed at school. And this is up 90 million new kids a year since the pandemic. And so we're making a move towards feeding more needy children around the world. And all these stats come from TED Talks. And so they've built out this new sort of program they're running of sharing good news around the world. So well done to the people that are looking after the kids that need help. And my heart goes out to them. And I want the next stat to be we're feeding 2 bazillion dogs around the world, roast chicken and rice as much as they want till they're fed all the way till their tummies are sore. So that'll be my next piece of good news that I'd love to hear.
Can't wait for that. Yeah, listen, it's so good to focus on the positivity and the good impact that we are having on the world, because it's so easy to become, negative about, you know, all the stuff that the media typically feeds us. And of course, they thrive on clicks. And so it's really good just to shift perspective a bit and just remember that for all the stuff that is happening that is bad and that makes you feel depressed, there are many great things if you'll only look for them.
You know, I've been saying this thing in my talk about Nelson Mandela, and that Nelson Mandela was known around the world really for one very key thing, forgiveness, of healing his past. And he was able to do this with such elegance and such class that the whole world took note, and he became, you know, global icon because of it. And a lot of people in South Africa think Nelson Mandela was a sellout. And my response to that is, if you haven't healed your trauma, he is a sellout. If you've healed your trauma, he's a hero. And if you think about the people that are being triggered about all the wars that are going on in the world, that is their own trauma that's now getting a voice to be shouted out into the world. If you've healed a lot of this trauma, what you start to then look for is ways to improve perspectives, energies, and things that you actually focus on. And it amazes me that most of us know the theory of where your focus goes, your energy flows. But then when it comes to war, all of those stories go out the window and everybody's now shouting out their traumas around the world and their injustices and everything that's going on. And I'm not taking anything away from those injustices, but there's also a better way for us to focus in on, well, how can we help those environments? How can we go about shifting those perspectives in those environments so that we can all uplift the energy rather than become part of the voice of victimhood, of anger, of all the traumas that have not been processed inside us? So, and if you are being triggered by this, you have some work to do in your own trauma space, because that's what happens. Is there any voice that tells you you shouldn't be traumatized or you should work on your trauma triggering you shows that you still need to work on some of those triggers. And yesterday I got something sent to me on Instagram and it triggered me. And I was like, oh, I need to work on something here. This is not about the thing that was sent to me. It was about my reaction to it, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of deep plays that are going on around the world right now.
All right. Well, let's shift into our first story for today. And someone who's been dominating the media landscape now for the past 2 weeks, really, I think, is, of course, Elon Musk. His companies have done some phenomenal things. We're going to look at both Tesla and SpaceX that have done, depending on who you speak to, you know, you'll hear some varying opinions on both of these things that have happened. But I think let's kick off with Tesla first, because that's obviously been a big one. You've had some backlash from your own views on it as well on TikTok. And what happened was that Elon had a big reveal event for Tesla, a big launch event, and he debuted a few things there. So, of course, he had Optimus there, which is the the robots that they will be selling in a few years. And then he also had this robo-taxi. I'm not sure if he had, because there's two versions of it. There's the like two-door sports car version, very slick, very modern. And then there's also one that's like a slightly bigger sort of minibus version, but it kind of looks like something out of iRobot. So it's difficult for me to explain what that looks like because it's very unconventional. It doesn't look like a typical sort of minibus would look like. So he had these two sort of very big or launches. And off the back of that, Tesla actually took a huge dip. So Tesla's shares dropped by about 9%. That means they lost about $70 billion in the market. And to put that into perspective, it means they lost an entire Ford, like as in like the entire Ford company's valuation. That's what they lost and more, because Ford's valuation is around $48 billion. And so, I mean, it's really interesting, right? Because Elon Musk is definitely someone who's living in the future. And he's putting all these product launches out into the world for people to see and for people to criticize and to be very skeptical of. So jumping off the back of that, where's your head at? What did you think about the Tesla, specifically the Tesla launch for this
week? So I just want to stop for a second and just talk quickly about the humanoid robots, the Optimus that's come out. And I want to remind everybody that the Optimus robot, according to Elon Musk, will be his first $10 trillion company. He reckons it will be the biggest technological product of our time because everybody will have robots around them. In fact, he reckons that there'll be more robots in the world over the next 10, 20 years than there'll be humans, which is fine. Whatever you want to think about that, that's okay. But I want you to also remember that these robots will have generative AI inside them. And generative AI does three things. Generative AI can create anything you want, which means it's replicating the right-hand side of our brain. It can analyze and become analytical about things. That's the left side of the brain. And it can interact with us like a human. And so what we have is these humanoid robots that are going to have generative AI in their brains. And right now, AI is sitting at a 155 IQ, end of this year, 310, middle of next year, 620, end of next year, 1,200. So by the end of next year, by the end of, like, let's say 2 to 3 years' time, you're going to have a humanoid robot with thousands of IQ points that is going to be just milling around us, doing things for us. And this is really like a huge, huge shift in the way that things are going to be shifting. So that's just the Optimus, right? Then we take the Tesla self-driving car. And I think what's happening there, and the reason the share price has dropped, and this is just me guessing because I don't know exactly what has happened. But think about that you have spent, I don't know, whatever you spent, $100,000 on a car that you bought from Tesla, and he's now just launched a car that you don't need to drive that will actually start to make you money if you buy it, that can actually work on your behalf when you are in the restaurant. This taxi can work. I mean, it's changed the dynamics of ownership of a car and to what value that car is going to have over the next few years. I mean, it's just mind-blowing what's going to be happening there. So I think people that own Tesla are really scared of this thing that's happening, and like already like the share price has kind of shifted. So it's mind-blowing how this is going to be shifting things. And then obviously the van, you know, the van is a copy of the taxi from iRobot, the movie that Will Smith was in. So yeah, I mean, it's very interesting what he's doing, but we should also talk about what else he did, because in the same week that he launched the self-driving car, that he launched the humanoid robots with them being cocktail waiters and all sorts of different things around them, he was also able to launch the largest supercomputer to be able to do with AI. The largest out of OpenAI, out of Google, out of Microsoft. He's got 100,000 GPUs from NVIDIA that he's opened up this AI machine supercomputer, as well as for the very first time, he created this Mechazilla, which is these arms, they call them the chopsticks, that could catch the rocket that was landing again. This rocket is 15 stories high building. So let's just recap. In 1 week, whatever you think of Elon Musk, because now he's gone all the way to Trump. Some people think he's an idiot. Whatever. In 1 week, self-driving cars, self-driving taxi, humanoid robots, Mechazilla, which is these chopsticks to hold onto a rocket, and the largest supercomputer launched in 1 week. I mean, come on. What is going on here?
No, it's insane, dude. It's insane. I think to your point, like whatever you think of Elon Musk, you have to appreciate the effort he's putting into helping the world advance and transform and progress. And remember that he was one of the first guys to actually enable us to be able to pay over the internet. He was one of the co-founders of PayPal. You know, so he's always been like that. Like he's always had this visionary approach towards the products that he's creating. And look, you know, when I looked at the launch of it, I think I understand why the share price dropped. I think that, you know, when you, like often you're a bit ahead of your time. And I think at the moment he's a bit ahead of the time. Like he wants to launch the taxis by 2026. Like, you know, there's so many things that need to happen for that to fall into place. And not just from a production point of view for him, but from a regulatory point of view and for cities to even adopt that sort of technology. And then, for example, like a lot of people were saying, but it doesn't even make sense to launch a two-seater taxi. Like, you know, most people, if you're going to have a taxi, you need at least space for four people. So like, there were all these like small things, I think, that add up that like you look at the picture and it's like, it's wow, it looks amazing, sleek lines, beautiful design, great showmanship, you know, him getting into the taxi and then driving away. But then when it comes to practicalities of it, it starts falling apart a bit. And I think that's why the share price took that big knock. But we see this often, you know, is that like you are just like, we spoke about this actually the other day. I can't remember where, maybe it was on a different call. We spoke about timing and how important timing is. And often with these kind of things, like the timing's just slightly off. And I think it doesn't actually matter in the long run. It matters in the short run because your stock price takes a bit of a knock. But in the long run, the timing is going to sort itself out. But you are already positioned to take advantage when the time is right. And I think that's the big thing that Elon Musk understands, is that he's willing to make those bets knowing that they'll pay off when the environment starts adjusting around it, because he can see that change is happening. In the same way that he was one of the first movers into the EV space, and now Tesla is the biggest in that space. Why? Because he knew that the world around him will catch up to that vision that he has.
Yeah, look, he is three, four steps ahead of everybody else. And he has the personality that is constantly looking for drama and for chaos. He is the perfect mix of a crazy scientist, billionaire character that is just shifting the world, that's irritating everybody around him, because that's what he does. His personality is like that. He wants to be irritable, and he's got like this Asperger sort of side to him. So he does have an irritating side to him, but my God, the guy is just, you know what he makes me feel like? It feels like, I feel like I'm going backwards. Like, what am I doing here? Like, why? What am I doing in my life that this guy is doing all these things and he's just streaks ahead?
What I always think about is that if you, like, would you want his life? And most likely you won't, you know, because there's just so much, I mean, like his, the stress that he must be dealing with and the, like, the relationships that he must not have in his life because, like, he has to make the sacrifice. And I don't want to put him on a pedestal, but, like, you need people like him who is willing to almost forego so many of the, like, the normal human things and to be eccentric and, like, crazy and all over the show to help people to advance. Like, and not everyone should aspire to be like that, but you'll have those kind of people. And I saw someone on LinkedIn say the other day, if he was only a bit more humble, and the response to it was quite good. It was like, well, he shouldn't be, because like his exact way of thinking and way of operating is what's helping him to create all of these amazing. Just a quick, like rapid fire, a few things for me. One thing that I do like about Elon Musk is that he's quite a nerd. So the Mechazilla thing, do you know where that comes from?
No.
So in the comics, you have Godzilla,
right?
But then you also have Mecha Godzilla.
Oh.
And it's this upgraded version of Godzilla that's like built out of steel, and like it's a robot version of Godzilla. So it's like a tribute to Mecha Godzilla. But even in Tesla, he has all these Easter eggs, right? So he has the...
Sexy.
There's a specific...
No, but the cars all add up to sexy. S... The Model 3, the Model X, the Model Y, yes. All adds up to sexy.
That's smart. Yeah. I didn't know that one. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But he has lots of things like that. So he has one that where if you push on the battery icon, when the car's at a certain charge or miles, it makes reference to Back to the Future. So it changes the car's like internal operating system to mimic the Back to the Future car. It has Ricky and Morty voices, like that very famous cartoon. So that's something I really love about him. He's like, he's having fun. And I think when you think of modern leadership, you know, it's such an important part of leadership. And I think as we progress over the next few years, we'll see that leaders have to kind of let go of this very serious and corporate approach to leadership. And it's almost something that I've always had a bit of an aversion to, that when I stepped into the leadership space initially, I kind of felt disconnected from it because it felt so dull to me. But leadership doesn't have to be dull. And in fact, I think where we are going, where authority doesn't matter anymore, where everything is automated, what we are optimizing for is connection. And in that space, what you need is a leader who's having fun. So that's something that you have to, like, you know, look at him and go, like, this dude is also, he's enjoying what he's doing. The second thing that I like about him is that he's making a lot of bets. And what we get to learn from that is it's about iteration and learning and failing and experimenting and just keeping that loop going. And it's so easy to look at that and go, oh, like, you know, the critics and the haters and the trolls will look at that and go, oh, but look, share price dropped 9%. What a failure.
Yeah.
It's not. No. Like, you just thinking short term.
Yeah.
This is just part of the process. Yeah. This is just a botched launch.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's the end of the company. So you need to have a lot more sort of long-term thinking about yourself. And then the third thing is, and we spoke about this over the weekend, is you don't have to like someone to learn something from them. And we can look at figures like Elon Musk, and he's polarizing, right? Because he's been at these Trump rallies and people will go like, oh, like now goes, when Taylor Swift came out in support of Kamala Harris, all of a sudden people were burning their like Taylor merch and like, you know, because one aspect of that person now defines everything about that person for them. It doesn't have to be like that. You know, you can look at someone and go, I don't agree with this way of like way that you're thinking or doing things, but I can still learn things from you off the back of that. And, you know, someone like Elon Musk is a great example. Like, yes, he's polarizing. There's still something that you can learn from him, even if it's learning that you don't want to be like him. That's also a good enough lesson.
That's such a good point, you know. And I think the big question that I ask myself, and I think anybody listening to this podcast can ask themselves is, are you taking enough risks in your life? Like, how big are your risks? Like, how big are you jumping into a chasm and doing your best? And often what usually happens is we only really meet ourselves when we got our back up against the wall. And what we do is we avoid any risks so that we don't have to go to that part of ourselves and dig deep. This guy is comfortable at digging deep. He's gone to the point where he's extended himself into himself at such a deep level. He's like, yeah, whatever, what's going to happen? Like, what's the worst that can happen? So he goes bankrupt and I'll start again. And I think that bravery and that courage has to really ask you, like, are you thinking big enough? Are you taking enough risks? Or are you living a temperate life and hoping that not too much disruption comes around you and you can just live your life out into the sunset? And I don't think there's a right or wrong. You know, I think it's just what it is. But I almost, like, when I was listening to one of the sort of videos about him, and I just started to reflect on my life. And I was like, look, I took a big risk moving to Dubai and it's paid off, thank God. And I've got a couple others that I want to take on. And I was like, man, I want to take more risks. Like, I want to put myself out there a little bit more, because otherwise I'm just living the same life and repeat. And I think he's such a showman for courage and risk, and bravo, like, well, yeah, done to him. Like, that's amazing. Really amazing.
I think that's a very good point. When you think about taking risk, how do you figure out what a big risk might look like for you? I know it's a bit of a weird question, but I think often when I speak to people, I'm like, okay, you need to take more risk. They don't even know what risk to take. And when they do come up with like something that I'm like, okay, I'll take a gamble on this, it's not really a risk. It's something that's quite small. It's like this much out of their comfort zone. So how has those risks presented themselves to you? Is it something that like you've organically come across, or is it something that you've thought about like, oh, this is a risk that I can go and take? Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. And I think you should become a coach. You're really good at asking questions, Eric Kruger. Do you have a coaching practice? Anyway, do you have your master's in coaching, by the way? So I think here's the thing for me is I think that the biggest risk is stretching your goals. And I think what happens when you think as big as you can, to the point of uncomfortability, to the point where you're asking yourself, who do you think you are that you want to do that? That in itself becomes an anchor point into the future. And then your actions to get to that point become the risk. So for example, so like I want to be on stage with Simon Sinek and Scott Galloway and Brené Brown. I want to be up there with the top 5% of speakers in the world. So then moving to Dubai was obvious. I had to take that risk because I couldn't do it from South Africa. And then my next risk is, do I move to America? Because I have to do this in America because that's the biggest market in our world. The American speaking market is worth $4 billion. Do I want to play with them? Where are they? They're all in America. That proximity there forces me to take the risk. So now where did my risk start? For my intention. And once I've set that intention, then the action becomes clear.
Very good.
If you're not courageous enough to set that intentional, what do they call it? A hairy, audacious goal, right? So what is your hairy, audacious goal? Like your BHAG, they call it what the M, anyway, there's a whole bunch of different acronyms around this thing. It's like, how big are you? How much impact do you want to have? What scale do you want to play at? How big do you want to go? And if you think about billionaires, for example, their risks are around money and around global moves. Mine's not about that. Mine's about impact in the world. That's a different type of approach, which means that my proximity to a world is what my risk is at. So moving cities, finding new friends, building new communities, building networks. And, you know, it was really hard coming to Dubai. You know, I've got a pretty well-established brand in South Africa. I don't really have to introduce myself. You come to Dubai, you're nobody, dude. Nobody. You're eating salty cracks for the first year because you're just like running around like a little Muppet, like trying to tell everybody what you've done. They're like, whatever, get out the way. That's hard. You know, you got to eat humble pie. So, I guess the same thing will happen in America.
Well, yes and no, because yes, you also have to go through that because you don't have the established name, but no, because you're coming in with a good name and with lots of support that you've already started building in the process.
So,
but I think that was a very good articulation. Yeah,
and I think you had a bit of a down day yesterday, and when I'm explaining to you this BHAG, are you rethinking your BHAG? And the risks that you're taking and not taking, because I know how ambitious you are in your career and you've done exceptionally well.
Yeah.
So how would you think about your BHAG now that I've told you about mine?
I have been stretching it, but it's quite weird. Like since moving to the Winelands, like life is really good here. You know, like you are 5 minutes away from the most beautiful wine farms in the world. Like stunning, you know. I've made friends with many of the owners of wine farms. Like we play paddle in the most beautiful settings. Now we're moving house at the end of this month. So like end of October. And we're moving closer to the ocean. So I'm going to be about 200 to 150 meters away from the ocean, like on my front door. And so life is really good. And so the challenge is like, how do you move beyond and still want more? And like, and in some ways, like even saying that, I'm like, what more do you want? Like, even that sounds like weird for me to articulate. But at the same time, like part of me feeling a bit down yesterday was that I felt like, am I just playing it too small? Like, I feel like I have a lot more potential and that I want to achieve a lot more. And I also want to be on stages with Simon Sinek and Brené Brown. Like, I have that similar intention. I feel very far away from it. And I think that's where that came from for me, was that I'm like, but the things that you're doing is like, they're too small. Like they're not going to get you to where you want to go. And then to start rethinking, well, what does bigger look like? Like, is that packing up my entire household in Somerset and moving to Dubai? Like Dan and I have had those conversations, you know, so like I'm open to it, but is that what it requires? I don't know. And I think that's why I asked you the question of like, what is the action of that risk? What does it look like? Because I'm not always sure what that risk should look like for me or what that risk might need to be in order to get there. And then I guess there's a part of me that's also trying to offset it, you know, against like, what can I do while here, but taking risk? And sometimes that doesn't work because then you're kind of playing somewhere in the middle. You know, you're like half in, half out. You're not fully committed to that.
You know, that is the trap of Cape Town. Life is good in Cape Town. Life is.
It is good in Cape Town.
You're squarely in the trap and in the stranglehold of the mother city. That is, you're stuck, Eric. And to be honest with you, there's very few places in the world that are better. Let's not kid. Cape Town is fantastic. Yeah. I've got friends of mine that have just gone away for the weekend and they're sharing pictures from this guest house that I've rented. And it is stunning. Beautiful, fresh air, winelands, mountains. Oh, the whole thing's beautiful. But to be honest with you,
dogs everywhere, yes.
I mean, it's all beautiful. Mm. And you know what? You can die like that. And Eric, also, you're doing well enough to live a good life there. But the truth is, proximity counts. And the coffees and the discussions you have with people counts. And I think the question then becomes, what is the priority for you? And then you have to make peace with what your priority is. Because if you're also not making peace with it, then you're also not able to live a life that is able to just give you satisfaction and contentment. And so that is a big, you know, it's a tough place to be because you almost also think that you're being ungrateful. You're like, I've got so much and I want more. Am I being a petulant child that I want more? Or do I make peace with the fact that this is where I'm at? I'm comfortable at this level of income that I'm having. And I'll go spend 3 weeks a year in the States and start slowly in the process of developing that brand rather than at John's pace. But John doesn't have a wife and dogs and a house. And, you know, it's a different sort of comparison. So, I mean, I think that's a deep question for you to want to ponder on. And I imagine a lot of people must have it. You know, like, am I doing enough? Do I want enough? Do I need more? Don't I need more? Yeah, it's a big question.
There's definitely the tension between where you are and the potential of what you could be. And I think so few people actually find out what they could be because they just don't push themselves to get to that level. And comfort definitely has its trappings, you know? And as much as you want to say to yourself that you're not in your comfort zone, it's very easy to fall into a comfort zone. And then to go, well, no, but I'm still pushing, I'm still working hard enough. But then like, are you really as hungry as you were when you just started and pushing as hard as when you just started. And sometimes I think, it's difficult to, like, if you've just eaten, the worst time for Dan to ask me, like, what do you want to eat tonight is when we've just finished lunch. Because, like, you've just eaten, like, you're full. Like, I can't think of what I want to, like, what I feel like tonight. Or the worst time to step into, like, a grocery store is when you've just eaten. Like, you look at everything on the side and you're like, I don't know what to, like, take. And so I think it's kind of the same thing. It's like you fall into that comfort zone and things are good and it becomes the enemy of better.
Sure. You know, it's so funny that this podcast has gone in this direction because to be honest, we've got about 10 more stories that we're not going to get to today because it just went in this direction of, are you thinking big enough? Are you taking enough risks? Like how expansive are you? And also, what does true contentment and happiness look like? Because I also think that's important for you to describe for yourself because if it's in a constant chase, that means that you never arrive. Like that you never really arrive at it. So, and I also think, you know, you told me, you were saying to me on WhatsApp, you had a bit of a down day and I explained to you, and actually I wasn't telling you, I was speaking to somebody yesterday, my friend he lives in North Carolina. And he was telling me that he's just starting out on the speaking circuit. And he was like saying to me, it's a bit slow. He wish he had more work coming. What would I suggest him doing it? What would I suggest for him to do? And I said to him, I said, you know, it's so funny you say that. I also think it's a bit slow, but you think I'm super busy. And I am super busy. But in my world, I'm like, ooh, there's so much more. And I'm like, I don't think you ever arrive, whether you're starting in the middle, at the end, like where... So I think the description of what is success look like what does that actually feel like and look like to you? And then be content in that idea and then say, well, this is my choice. And I'll reevaluate it every 6 months or every year and redescribe it for the next 6 months or every year. And I think, you know, I've read some amazing things about marriages doing this. It's like you run a responsibilities and sort of like things that make this marriage successful. What are they for the next year? Well, I need you to pick up the kids 3 days a week. I need you to be at dinner twice or four times a week. I need you to open the door for me. These are my non-negotiables. Okay, that means that is a successful marriage if you've got those five things box ticked. And then for your wife, you need to give five things that you expect for five things to be ticked. And I think the same thing goes for our careers and income and money and fame and whatever it is that we want to do. And if you think about it, Eric, you've now got two books, a bestseller, you've got an award-winning podcast, you're busier than you've ever been, you've just booked yourself a four-city tour of Mexico, and you're having a miff time yesterday thinking to yourself, where's my career going? I'm such a loser.
It didn't...
we are such.
It's so funny because your rational mind can tell you that, you know, like I'm sitting there feeling like very sorry for myself yesterday. And my mind is going, oh, yes, like international keynote speaker, just award winning podcaster, best selling author. Yes, like Mexico speaking tour. Yes, feel sorry for yourself.
It's chewing it, boy.
But it doesn't, you know, it's so funny. Yeah, when you're in it, as much as you want to rationalize it and like you can look at all the facts, it doesn't change it. Hey, like you almost just need to go through it and like just, and that's why, you know, it's always been great because we've done this a few times on the pod where one of us might just feel our energy is a bit off and we'll say, can we just postpone? But it's amazing to just like, you could just sit with it and work your way through it. And then the next day you feel much better, rebound, if you go and actually do the work. So like meditation, revisiting my goals, advice from a friend, and you know, like, and it starts feeling a bit better again. So it's cyclical. So like, don't stew in it.
Well, no.
Yeah, good chat.
No.
I enjoyed that.
No. Stew in it. Sit in the stew. Sit. But like, give yourself some time to sit in it because I think it's nice to feel sorry for yourself. It's nice sit in that in your wet nappy. Sit in your wet nappy, let that squishy shit and pee like sit all over you, enjoy it, and then eventually you can take it off and clean it and get moving. You know what I mean? Anyway, let's close off on that note, on that high note of a shitty nappy.
Let's do it.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us this week. It's been wonderful to have you on this very personal podcast. I mean, we, like I said, we have 15 other stories. Robin did so much research and we went on one story. So thank you, Robin, for all the effort. Sorry we only used only one story, but Eric needed some help. He was going through a bit of a tough time. So we needed to hold his hand through this process of redesigning success. Yeah.
It's what is The Expanse if not my personal therapy podcast?
Exactly. So happy that we have a few thousand people listening on your session, Eric.
My therapy sessions. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, everybody. And you want to close us off? You go for it.
Yeah. I was just going to say thank you for the therapy. Thank you for Robs for preparing a great set of articles for us not to get to. But we really hope that you are enjoying the new format. And today, I think, was a bit of a blend of the new and the old. For those familiar with the pod, like that, you would have found something that is quite true to our nature. And for those new to the pod, you would have found that we are covering some more current news and things that are happening in the world. And I think that is sort of the blend that you will find over time with the pod. So it's great to have you with us. It's great for you to be expansive with us. You can find us on all of the platforms that you use to listen to your podcasts. Find us on YouTube, on TikTok. A lot more of this stuff is going to be video-based, so make sure you find us there. And until next time, be expansive.
Ciao.